So you
Hello.
managed to see Dear Octopus, I believe.
Yeah, I went on it last night, which was last night, and I'm so glad I did because I was sort of wondering whether they'd do an NT live of it and stuff, and then they didn't seem it didn't seem to be on their list, so I thought I've got to grab a moment. So and it's been so interesting because I know that we talked about it before and you were at the press night, and that so many friends over the last few weeks have talked about going. And I absolutely loved it. But what I found interesting, one was that the last night was on a Wednesday, which
I
why
know,
shouldn't it
quite
be?
rare.
I know. And then, but that also the nature of how something grows into itself, and that a company, who have found their feet, they've found their company rhythm, they've got to grips with the words, the you know how audiences react to it, and there's a great joy and celebration. The danger being with the last night, you try and do something definitive, but actually, a really happy company will
Yeah.
just sort of do it. No one will declare independence. But that's in direct opposition to the adrenaline and sort of crazy push of a press night.
Yeah.
Of
Yeah.
course, when it's judged,
Totally.
you
I
know,
saw
you.
it again this week. So I went
Okay.
on Monday. So 2 nights finished, because I wanted my husband to see it, and because partly I think, said before, because it means a lot to my family, that play, and my father always quoted it, and in fact my brother quoted it at our wedding, which Icaro, being from Italy, had, it meant it was a nice thing, but he didn't realize where it came from. So
Yeah.
we went on Monday, and yes, it has. It's kind of it's it was always wonderful. I mean, the pre I you know it was just it always breathed and had this kind of quality of a real family on stage. But now it did just feel like a company absolutely settled into that world. And you feel it was one of those plays where you felt that you could step on stage and actually be part of it, that you would be part of that family. And
Yeah,
it
yeah.
house it had it's got it was both unreal and real. I loved it so much.
Particularly, I mean, Lindsay Duncan and Malcolm Sinclair as a sort of mother and father were just sublime. But what I really loved was how real the sibling relationships were, and that sort of ease and spiky sort of, trying desperately and failing to resist falling back into the old family role model,
Exactly.
and also being annoyed with themselves and all of, I mean, that's Dodie Smith's writing, but it, and Emily Burns's direction. But again, that the nuanced quality of those performative relationships can only get more interesting through the nature through a long run. Not that it was a massively long run, but I just yeah, it was gorgeous. It was sort of like a chamber piece, really, and
You
I
were
was
saying
totally
it
lost
reminded
in it.
you of doing the Voysey inheritance. You realize
Yeah.
that you realize it was that at the Littletons as well, because you also realize that theatre suits sort of slightly old-fashioned plays in a way. I feel that
Yeah, although Alison Chitty's set took in the width a bit. She
right.
created like a sort of doll's house, within the space so that we entered and then walked in, which actually they did last night, didn't they?
No, so
Yeah.
it's got, again, it's got a marvelous revolving set.
I thought the set and the way that they used the nature of that and the constant movement of it, with the running joke that she was always giving people tasks, mum was, which I loved, which was sort of
Don't like
painfully familiar.
mums.
Yeah, yeah, my mum.
Mums
I did
everywhere.
plant those daffodil bulbs. Anyway, that's a little window into my life. Yeah, all of it was just I loved the movement of it and the doll's house nature of it and how that then solved issues like with the dance that they didn't you could hear the dance that you got the slight window through into the room. All of that I thought was just yeah sublime genius.
Well, it has
But
been real.
Voysey had a similar thing, didn't have the same movement, but it reminded me a lot with the dinner table, which I'm sure I've mentioned before, which I love, which is a thing that Granville Barker always used to do in his plays, was always to put large pieces of furniture in the middle of the stage so that nobody could take center stage. And it forced actors to react and move with the set, which is which is sort of great. It's a great lesson, but it's also great, shows great knowledge of actors.
Yeah, brilliant. You know, it has been, so I suspect it will appear as a sort of NT Live or something. They've definitely filmed it because they, I think the performance Tuesday was filmed. So who knows? But I'm glad you've seen it. And it was a very nice start to a week. And welcome to this episode of As the Actress Said to the Critic, with me, the critic, Sarah Crompton.
And with me, the actress, that's Kel.
And what I really want to talk about actually this week is critics and their reactions to things. Because, but I also want to talk about, it's been the critics centre stage this week because it was the Critics Circle Awards, which is the one awards that is absolutely, it's voted for by people who've seen everything, really. I mean, it is true, and it's completely democratic sort of vote, for better or worse, you know, you just send off your thoughts in the dark. I presented an award to Jack Wolfe, who we saw together in Next to Normal, which is at the Wyndham. So lovely to present an award to him, because you and I love that ensemble so much, and but he was so wonderful in it,
really special,
and it was very nice. And then also sort of very movingly, Andrew Scott, who won for Best Actor for Vanya, gave this extraordinary speech. His mum died 2 weeks ago, and I don't think people actually knew that, so you know, I don't think going up to the ceremony people knew that. And he came to the ceremony, which was in itself, you know, incredibly nice of him, quite moving that he came. Yeah. And he gave, you can see it, it's available on YouTube, it's, you can look it up online. It is the most astonishingly moving speech about how the arts had enhanced his life and his mother's life, and how she loved the arts. And he also talked about her as being the only critic he really cared about. Taking her notes and talking to her about his performances, and then went on to talk about how he had discovered since her death that the other thing that the arts do is, you know, are a solace for grief, that they give you an access to some, when you're coping with these sort of huge emotions, you know, music and words and poetry and drama give you access to comfort. And it was it was really, really amazing and something. Yeah. And I was deeply touched by it, that a very busy actor would do it. And also, he's made history because he's the first actor ever to win both the Film Critics Awards and the stage because of his work this year.
Oh, wow. With All of Us Strangers.
With All of Us Strangers.
And then, oh, wow. And interesting that both Vanya and All of Us Strangers have that supernatural ghost plot.
Yeah.
Must be very sort of serendipitous and extraordinary for him, if that's what his year has been full of. And I do think it's true that, you know, I mean, it doesn't have to be on stage, but certainly words and music and stuff can articulate when your own grief fails to know what shape it is.
Mm.
You know, grief is so irregular and surprising and unending, and sometimes the words of other people can make sense of it.
Yeah.
He must have felt that this year. I mean, I can't put words into his mouth, but I can.
People's reaction to All of Us Strangers is partly that it does offer the thing that everybody wants, which is the chance to go back and talk to your parents as an adult, when you understand them and when you have things to say to them and you're brave enough to say them. And I think actually that does take you back to Dear Octopus. I think the kind of extraordinary thing about the famous Dear Octopus speech, which is end of the play, which is about the family, is that it does, I understand why my dad liked it as a speech so much, that summarize the complexity of so many people's feelings about their families, you know, that sense that you're both, you know, you bound by the tentacles and you think you want to escape but you don't really. And I think you know, that is an example of sort of good writing, saying something that you feel and you didn't necessarily know you felt or knew you felt in that way. But
I loved what he said after the speech as well, actually, about echoing forward as much as it echoes back.
Mm-hmm.
and that you're speaking to your future self as you as much as you are to your child like self, and to your the ghosts of your family as much as the family who are sat at the table, that it goes in both directions. Yeah, it was beautiful. It was really beautiful. And I wish I'd gone earlier, that I could have sort of immediately gone back and watched it again. Because there's so much detail often in those sorts of larger companies that you feel that you can't possibly look at three or four different things at once.
They might transfer, but I mean, that is something else we've both been thinking about this week, which is the pressure on space in theatres. Partly because of the pandemic, but and partly because things are, if they're successful, settling in for longer runs because people want to recoup.
Of course.
There is an incredible shortage of spaces suddenly. At the moment.
Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, I know, you know, not that it was a massive conversation with Rock and Roll, but at that point, so that's 2 months ago, coming up to 2 months ago, there was a queue of like 17, 18 shows waiting to go into London, which I don't know, but the people who reported that to me said that that length of queue is unheard of.
No, I think there are, it's like planes waiting to land. There are these huge projects. It's come up this week with Lynette Linton has made a really powerful intervention in the Evening Standard, also available online, about the Olivier Awards ignoring the talent of Black and Brown theatre makers. And it's really incredibly good piece. And perhaps it will be something we might discuss at another time and maybe get Lynette to come and talk to us. But she, one of the points she makes is that Red Pitch, which is this Tyrell Williams play, which I've recommended before, about three young boys, you know, playing football and talking about their lives, it's waited 2 years to get to the West End. And
wow.
That's the play that's at Soho Place. I got where plays were. I think I said last week it's at the Royal Court. It's at Soho Place. And it's wonderful. And they've managed to move it with the same cast, which is great. But that's a long time for someone that won all the best playwriting awards.
Oh, so it is moving. It is going in.
It has moved. It's on now. It's on now. It has been a 2 year gap.
Wow.
And it's problematic. And all the... you know, smaller spaces are closing down. So like there is that problem. There's a pressure on getting a play on. But even if you get a success, it's now becoming more and more complicated to actually get it into a theatre.
Yeah. I think, you know, there is, people are adverse to taking risk because people are still recouping. As you say, the number of places available is limited. And things being on for longer runs. But I think it's really, really hard to know what the real problem is, because, you know, the number of London theatres or West End theatres and off West End theatres hasn't changed dramatically, has it?
No, it hasn't. It hasn't. So it must just be that there must be more good work waiting to come in.
Or maybe
using alternate spaces as much. I mean, certainly certain theatres have got blocked. So the Bridge has got blocked now because Guys and Dolls is such a success. So that's just running and running. Stranger Things has gone into the Phoenix, which will have a really long, I mean, I think that, but that the Phoenix has actually been out of commission, tends to have long runs. So yeah, it is quite complicated to know what's happened and why there is this sense that you can't get new work in.
Yeah. It's a shame that there aren't more rep systems. I mean, the National haven't done that for a while. You know, that it used to be they'd have three or four different things running at once. And when the Travelex season first started, they'd create a set that could easily move between one play and another. That was under sort of Nick Heitner and Nick Starr. And I don't think has been employed under Rufus.
Again, well, he stopped it, I think, again. And that, again, is financial, I mean, it just, because if you're constantly juggling plays, obviously that's just more expensive as a way of the building than it is. I mean, the rep system is something that, you know, is really hard now to sustain, because it's not just the, you know, blocking stages. It is just constantly changing stages, I think.
Yeah.
Is another show,
but maybe also just we're still recovering from the hiatus of COVID, that things are, if something's waited 2 years to come in, that, I mean, when did Red Pitch go on? That must have been straight after COVID, was it?
Yeah, straight after COVID. It's the year, yeah, it wins and all the prizes, that
then it would have suffered,
and then they brought it back to the bush,
right?
And I think it is particularly a problem for, you know, the work of rising writers. I mean, I think that is the problem, that, you know, it's such a good play. And but I also am conscious, if you look at the historical perspective, that, you know, people have always moaned about the lack of new writing, the lack of space in the West End. And at some levels, there are new places. I mean, at Soho Place, which is Nika Burns's new theatre, where the Critics Awards were held, which is where Red Pitch is now on, is a fantastic sort of, you know, medium sized space of exactly the kind that the West End has been crying out for. So her theatre now has three, you know, stages that it's running kind of constantly. So it is, you know, I think you're probably right that actually it feels bad, but maybe it's...
I think Nika is such an extraordinary sort of godmother of the West End in that way, that she gets it and she really sort of takes punts on people and ideas and has created a completely new theatre in the middle of London, which is extraordinary in itself.
Amazing. And has had a wide range of work. I mean, Sophie Okonedo won the Critics Circle Best Actress for Medea, which was there. Sat there just as beautifully as Red Pitch sits there. You know, it is an amazing sort of space, and it is lovely because it's in the round and sort of has got a kind of quite Greek theatre feeling.
Yeah. It was interesting yesterday with World Theatre Day or International Theatre Day, whatever it was yesterday. Was it yesterday?
A bit further back. Some earlier in the week.
Oh, was it? Okay. You know, the looking back over, I was just wanted to work out how long theatre had been going, you know, in terms of recorded theatre, not going right back. It was like 250,000 years. And that actually those early sort of Greek theatre stages were so brilliantly designed.
Yeah.
You know, and
have you ever done one of those? Have you ever done a sort of in the open air amphitheatre? I knew there was a word.
I don't think I have.
I remember once talking.
It's terrible, I can't remember.
I remember your life. I remember once talking to Sylvie Guillaume, who did one, I can't remember which amphitheatre it was, and she did Russell Malifant's Push in one of those spaces. I can't remember which one, but an amazing open air theatre space. And she said what nobody had warned them is that at the end, if everybody liked it, they threw their cushions.
Oh, wow.
So suddenly they're taking their bows. Battery of cushions landing on the stage. And she said the first time it happened, they didn't know that it was like, we loved it. They thought they were. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, and they thought
where in the world they fell cushion.
Yes, I know. What, instead of red roses or whatever,
you do. Exactly. They've got to hand, so they shower.
That's hilarious. How odd.
No, brilliant.
I don't think I ever have. I think I can remember talking to Peter Hall about it years and years and years ago when I was in a company with him, and because he was so passionate about it, and he was building the Rose at the time, the Kingston Rose, the Rose at Kingston, and weirdly, my son Artie was at school with a boy whose parents were theatre architects. So they were building theatres all over the world, and it was fascinating to talk to them about it, really. And I think there's just so much that gets borrowed from the original.
Yeah, yeah. And certainly that sense of being sort of a sort of semi coming into the action is really something. And
And you're cocooned into something.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice.
Yeah, yeah.
But the other thing I want to talk about this week was I do want to talk about critics this week, because the musical opening night has opened.
Yeah.
And starring Sheridan Smith, directed and adapted by Eva Van Hover, written by Rufus Wainwright, with an amazing cast, according, you know, like people like Hadley Fraser and so on. Brilliant, brilliant cast. And it was one of those really odd things. Sometimes, and I've never known quite how this happens, word starts to seep out that something's not going terribly well. And that definitely happened with opening night. that right. people was kind of a sort of a low buzz of discontent, sort of from audiences. But you always try and ignore that, really, because, you know, it's previews, which we've talked about. Previews are meant to be the moment that you try things and get them right. Anyhow, we all pitched up at different nights. It's quite important to say it. So there were like four press nights for opening nights, and there wasn't a group of critics going. We all turned up on our different evenings. And what has been astonishing, what makes me actually think critical discourse in the United Kingdom is very good, is that the reviews have ranged from "this is brilliant, it is rethinking theatre," to "this is a terrible mess." And so right across the board, and from really, you know, really distinguished critics, people have given it a lot of thought, and everybody's gone in and had a completely different, had a completely different response. And it's sort of encouraging, I think. So you've gone from 4 stars to 1 star in terms of stars. But really interesting that, you know, that sense that,
and sorry, I've got a friend here who feels that she should be in the woods, not the,
sorry, it's
that's
the dog. What,
it's my stomach going, but it's a dog.
Yes.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I mean, also odd that it's about a press night as well. You know, it's not entirely about a press night, but it's about opening a show.
Yeah, it is.
And no, go away. No, and no, right, go outside.
Podcast with dogs. I think I should just do a podcast with dogs, just have the dogs in the podcast.
Yeah. No, you know, that it's sort of about the process, you know, so it becomes this sort of, what's the word? Not Brechtian, but
meta.
Meta version of itself.
Yes.
You know, and even the film that it's based on is anti-narrative. So the whole thing is anti-formula, anti-opinion, and the fame and sort of cult following of the film wasn't immediate. You know, it's sort of grown over time.
Yeah, he couldn't get it. I don't think he could get it shown. I think it's one of those weird films that it was made in 1977 by John Cassavetes,
yeah,
the film on which the stage show is based. And I think he made it, then couldn't get it screened. It's not just that he couldn't raise finance for it, but it just absolutely, it took years to establish itself. And now it's become not only this, but also it was the basis of the extraordinary Ruth Wilson play, The 24 Hours, was the second woman, was based on a scene from the second woman within the play, because that's what it's called within opening night. It's called The Second Woman. And it's basically about an actress having a sort of meltdown, really, and the reasons for that.
Yeah. It is fascinating. I mean, it is interesting in terms of if a critical opinion is so completely divided, the mirror that you hold, not up to the performance, but to critical thinking, is that it's entirely taste.
Well, it's also entirely, so that's really interesting, is partly taste. What I think is most interesting about critical writing is when everybody is describing the same, more or less the same thing. And it's not just taste, it's how you analyze and how you receive it. I am at the lower end of the opening night scale.
Right.
So I felt that it was a mess. And I love everybody involved in it. You know, I love Van Hover. I'm a huge admirer of Sheridan Smith, who I think has a sort of an incredible relationship with an audience, you know, can absolutely wrap an audience around her finger. I love the support. I like Rufus Wainwright. I also quite like sort of messy experimental theatre. What I felt was that it, and I like the film very much, maybe that's part of it. So what I felt was that it added too many layers of complication to an already complicated thing.
Right.
And we lost the sense of what's on stage and what's off stage, because the thing Van Hover introduces is a camera crew. So there's a documentary camera crew. So in addition to what you're seeing, which is both on stage and off, you're also seeing actors' reactions very large on a large screen and actors' reactions on a stage, and you're not always watching on the screen what you're watching on the stage. So there's one song where the face that you're seeing is actually hard to see on the stage. So it's incredibly sort of complicated. And I felt it was a bit too much. But some people have relished that. Right. But I suppose you're right. It is a matter of days. And it is just a matter of where the judgment settles, which yeah. I didn't like. And yeah, I mean, I take your point. You know, there isn't, and I think that's good that there isn't definitive. There isn't one of us who's right. Though obviously we all think we're right. I think I'm right.
Yeah. Yes. Right.
Arifa, who wrote about it in The Garden, she thinks she's right, you know. So it's just, I find it encouraging, oddly. I like, you know, in a plural society, it's nice to have plural opinion.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it always opens up the nature of what is reviewing, yes. Who is it for, and that we should know more about the person who's writing it, or rather we the person who's writing it takes up a very large part of the pie chart of the effect of the review, because if everybody's watching the same thing, the sort of the prism, the difference between one review and another is the critic. So we ought to know more about the critic. We shouldn't, I suppose, you know, dependent on, you know, the platform from which it's being published, whether it's online or a paper or a magazine or whatever it is, or on the radio or television. I don't know how you open that up.
No.
But that's the bit of the puzzle that's missing, because I think sometimes the anonymity of the writer, you know, coupled with the sort of finite gravitas of these words matter, these words make a difference, is sort of imbalanced, that somehow the people that read the paper should know as much about the critic as they should about the thing, so that they can make a judgment with all the information, rather than thinking what they're reading is the truth. That is what they will experience.
Yeah, I think you know, it's good for the show in the sense that I even writing a negative review, I would have disliked it if people hadn't given it a try themselves, because it's interesting. It's not a dull show. There's no way that it's dull.
Yeah.
What I think is kind of nice is that for those performers that, you know, basically critics saying to audiences, well, go and have a go, you know, see.
Yeah, yeah.
So there is a see what you think element to that kind of huge diversity. It means that, you know, at the very smallest level, the producers can put 4 stars on the poster and, you know, people will go and try it, which is exactly what they should do. So yeah. That's the first thing. In a way, that diverse opinion means that you're saying to audiences, this is what I think, but have a look at it. And that kind of sometimes does get lost. I mean, certainly in America, critics can still close a show. You know, the New York Times isn't as powerful as it used to be, but because there are fewer critics and fewer writing seriously about theatre, that it is really perilous. And actually, yeah. Interestingly, I was talking to Jack Thorne, who again won a Critics' Choice Award for The Motive and the Cube Best Play. Critic Circle Award, and he was saying that he is the man who is awake at midnight 2, 5, 6 reading all the reviews. He says everybody always says they don't read the reviews. All he does is read reviews,
and that's interesting.
You know, so they do still matter, and it's nice if there is that variety of it. But the other thing you're saying, I do think, is really interesting. When I was an arts editor, I was very conscious that if you were a reader of The Telegraph, you got to know Charles Spencer. He was very much of that school of critics.
Yeah.
Some people dislike that quite a lot. And, you know, there are many people in the theatre community who felt that he was too opinionated and too personal about things. But you absolutely knew where you were.
Yeah.
People knew about his life. that has sort of declined in a sense, so that because people don't have such a close identification with one paper anymore, and because papers don't value critics who are personalities in quite the same way, I think that has altered. But it is true that if you read The Guardian, you have a sense of who Arifa Akbar is. If you read What's on Stage, you have a sense of who I am. And it does affect it, but equally, I mean, I don't know, it doesn't explain everything.
Well, what's interesting, I went to finally saw Motive and the Cube as an NT Live earlier this week as an encore. And I loved listening to Jack Thorne and Sam Mendes talk in the interval film about that it is ultimately a love letter to the rehearsal room. And whilst it's about that time and about those people and they pay homage to every single person in that room, it is particularly Sam's original idea. Is this, there's so much that as an actor or in any way part of a production team, you take for granted about how those rooms work and the process of creating something that you realize. And I know from, you know, when patrons have been invited into the rehearsal, which I've had a few times experience that, and they come in halfway through, and it's alarming to have that rush of adrenaline before you're ready for people to watch it. But for them, it's just fascinating. They feel so happy to be invited in. And I sort of think, well, that's interesting, isn't it? Because this, and the way that Sam Mendes talked about it, about the nature of failing and then getting up again and then trying something else, and that out of failure comes something mesmeric and magic that appears to be conjured, but actually has come from the graft of mining the words, mining your reaction to the words, and that that's what you watch with Johnny Flynn's Burton, which I loved. And the nature of creativity, the nature of putting a play together, the nature of bringing a company together, and I've said it so many times, I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, but I just feel it so passionately that the part of the endeavor is very rarely talked about in reviews. What is reviewed is the final product, but the final product is still active. Which is clear from going to the beginning of Dear Octopus and then seeing the final show that it doesn't, it isn't still, it continues to, like an ecosystem, grow and expand and react with its exposure to light and noise, and that's what's so beautiful and exciting about it. And that the mistakes, what we deem to be mistakes, are by their very nature, part of the process. They're not something going wrong. They are part of the journey. And I suppose what, and maybe, as you say, the full picture of negative to positive reviews is more, is a better way to view a reaction to something, because that's actually how audiences react to things. You get people that go to a show and love it, and actually for the person sitting next to them in the auditorium, their life has been changed. And you can't predict that whether on what night that will happen, whether on a press night or a Monday or a matinee or whatever it is. And that's what's so gorgeous about it, is that it's serendipitous and unpredictable, and it's alive. And I think that then what I react to and continue to react to is the nature of any one review being, this is what it is, this is the thing. And that's the thread that is missing somehow. And as you say, the spectrum of opinion being equal to the spectrum of the theatrical journey is a more honest and exciting relationship. But how you then put that down on paper as a critic to say, this is alive and moving and whatever, and
Yeah, well, it's interesting, isn't it? Maybe we should all go back and look again, Opening Night again in 6 weeks, you know, because it will change. I mean, I know it will change. All About Eve, which was Eva Van Hove's last sort of big examination of theatre in theatre, if you like, that changed kind of radically from its opening and to its ending. So I'm convinced that Opening Night will have that. And but what I do, so what I think is two things. One is I think that actually, one of the problems with West End, and one of the problems that opening night faces, is it's opened in the West End. So
yeah,
it's a big show in the West End and it's opening there at the Gielgud. It's hard for it because that immediately puts pressure on.
Yeah. One of
the great things about subsidised theatre ecology is that it does allow for a certain amount, and it should allow for a certain amount of failure. It should allow for experiment of the sort that, you know, brings about change, brings about kind of really great theatre in the end. Because, and it's very true in dance. Dance is, because there are fewer theatres where dance can go on, dance makers are incredibly sort of exposed very early on, and they're not allowed to fail. And I actually think you need places that will nurture that and allow for something that doesn't quite work, because, as you say, out of that something will come.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important. And so, but what I feel about opening night in a funny way is that, and it's been given a chance to sort of grow and develop by the diversity of opinion. And it feels to me encouraging that, you know, it's everything at the moment is black or white. You know, everything is very, very good or very, very bad. What this kind of reaction to this, you know, show reveals is that you can have an, you know, there is nuance. There is, it's very small borders that are sending you one way or the other. Everybody agrees that Sheridan Smith is brilliant. You know, nobody has doubted that. So at the centre of this show is a great performance that can blossom, can develop. And it's got a kind of wildness, which, yeah, I do find it encouraging. And I do feel that it, at a time when it's hard to have diverse opinion, I've quite liked this moment where, you know, you weren't opening the papers on Wednesday morning and seeing everybody saying, oh no, it's great, or no, oh yeah, oh no, it's a failure, oh yes, it's a failure, whatever. You know, you've just got, and I know most people don't do that, but a lot of theatre goers do look at a number of reviews. So yeah. I take everything you're saying about that. it makes criticism a kind of really random art. But I kind of like that randomness.
But then if you embrace that, if you know, as you do, you know, you see yourself within a sort of panel of people who are equally passionate, but come from, you know, completely different headspaces, different lives, different, you know, and then all of that makes for interesting material. I suppose it would be really interesting, and this is probably too expensive and maybe crazy, but to have like a postscript press night that you invite all the press back for the last night. Yeah. And ask them to talk about the nature of how that production has changed, or whether they, and if they indeed stand by their opinions of however many months before, as an experiment, you know, just sort of lesson in honesty, you know, and
I'm not certain, but since my main worry with the show was the book, which I think Van Hover, who wrote it, perhaps needed someone else to sort of help him with. I'm sure that, and that will sort itself out, you know, because books do change over time. There's no doubt that shows settle, things move a bit. I would love to go at the end. Maybe we should suggest it. I'd love to go.
That's the nature of it, isn't it? In terms of, I remember years ago doing a Christopher Pride play at Chichester. We did Ladies Not for Burning, and he was alive and very much involved in the production. And because it was directed by Sam West, and Sam is so sort of enthralled to the literary background of most things he does for, you know. And so we ended up going with Christopher Fry through a lot of his essays, and then ended up doing versions of his smaller plays at different points in the run, and it was a really exciting time. But there was a brilliant essay, which I'm sure I've mentioned before, that he wrote about the nature of art forms and theatre being the best reflection of true life that an art form could achieve, because it is movable and alive and reacts to its surroundings, whereas most other art forms, whether they're books or the written word or radio or art or music, are set like a snapshot. So the only thing that then continues to move is experience. of that piece.
Yeah.
But actually, theatre in its brilliance is plastic. And so really, critical opinion of it ought to be plastic in some way. So I think if there were an arc, you know, or a sort of timeline, critical timeline, that, you know, different critics could come in at different points, and then you have this last night moment where they go back and go, what did I think? Do I stand by what I said? Or actually the thing that I was worried about resolved itself, or that thing that was brilliant became part of the whole in a different way. It stood out because everything else came up to meet it. Or it stands out less because everything came up to meet it. But it's an interesting, that dynamic is hard then to set in black and white.
Yeah, but I do like the dynamic. Hooray!
No,
you're absolutely right.
That's why the podcast is, as the actress said to the critic, I'm here to sort of
completely
defense.
No, but I think that idea, I think Christopher Fry is a good, it's a really good place to end it, because that is absolutely true. That's why you love theatre. That's why I love it. You never know. And I tell you, I just concluding one last thing about opening night. David Benedict, who writes for Variety, wrote a review which was very similar to mine, not in terms of just what he said, but in terms of how it analysed what had happened and why he had doubts about it. And when I read it, I said, we seem to have written the same review. But what is really, really strange is that not only did we not talk about it, we didn't even go and see the show on the same night. So there's a sense in which so when you're saying, how do you know the critic? Somehow he and I, the analysis we come up with for our actors, just by chance, this, not always, but on that moment, turns out to be the same analysis, and other people have analysed different things. And it is really interesting. So yes, it does come down to the individual, and it comes down to how you receive something that, you know, is given you, really, as like any member of the audience. So I do think, but I'm kind of encouraged by it all.
No, it's exciting, and also, you know, as we've said in so many other forms, exciting that variety of opinion is allowed to be expressed, that there's room for that.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And that, and as an audience member, you can choose to listen or not.
Yeah, so that is why theatre criticism, we ought to come to a conclusion, but that is why theatre criticism is different. I always make the equivalent with sports writing. I always say theatre critics, when I was fighting for the arts within a paper and saying, let's do more and let's have more coverage, I always say it's the same as sports writing, because, you know, there is a small part of the population that loves sports, a small part that loves arts. The people who love those things will read passionately about them.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't just always worry about the people who don't care about football or cricket or whatever. Anyhow, that was my argument. The difference is, of course, that in sport, there is an objective score. There is an objective sort of number of runs or number of goals. Whereas theatre, by its nature, everything in a sense is subjective. There can't be a result that is separate from an opinion. The opinion and the result are the same, and that's what does make it so vital and exciting as a form, but that is also why writing about it means that the taste of the person becomes so critical.
Although I would say that there are similarities between pulling together a cast and crew and production company and putting together writers and they're desperate.
That's
my inner voice is no. When you get a new team player, when you get a new coach, if they're playing on different grounds, the weather, you know, are they playing at home or away? All of those things affect the whole. So yes, the actual score at the end, but the experience, the visceral highs and lows of a game must be similar.
Very similar. Yeah. But just with that last bit is subjective, not objective.
Yes, absolutely.
But dog needs walking.
Dog needs walking, sorry, yes.
But very nice touch, Nancy. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter! And that's a goodbye from me, Nancy Carroll, the actress.
Goodbye from me, Sarah Crompton, the critic.